turn your cell phones off.
Good morning. The Lord bless you all. I don't like to give this experience presentation very well, but it's full of a lot of emotion, and my intention is not to magnify myself. But rather, my intention is to show you that a person can reach a high place in this world, and it does not satisfy. It does not enrich the soul at all. Matter of fact, it can be quite a letdown when you are very successful in the eyes of the world. It can be very much a letdown in your inner feelings. And at one time I decided that this experience is too much of an amplification of myself. But I was at a church in Idaho, and the minister and I were discussing what I was going to present, and I told him, I'm going to quit giving my experience. I'm not going to do that anymore. And he backed me up against the wall, and he preached me a sermon. He said, God didn't give you this experience for you to put it in your pocket and hide it. So here I am. If it's a blessing to someone, then it's worth it. Oh, I'm starting off with a problem. I'm going to have to stop and start over here. I came with a rather strange family background, in that my father was an atheist. He was raised that way. His father raised three boys, and their belief was atheistic. And my grandfather's approach to all these things was, he was very enthusiastic, and he would travel great distances to present his view of things. Fortunately, my father was not aggressive in his belief. It's simply that he found it hard to believe that there was a God. And there are many things that take place in this life that can lead you to that kind of conclusion, because many people have an incorrect view of what we are here for and what God intended on this earth. Now, God does not have any blame for the problems we have, not the swollen jaw or any of these problems. It's man. Man earned what we have here. But I think God does have a very strong intention in it all. None of these things were a surprise to God. Just imagine when he created this world and he put Adam and Eve here in this world, he knew that in a short time, just a couple thousand years later, he was going to destroy all but eight souls. He knew that. And yet he went ahead with his creation. He had a reason in it. Now, my personal belief is that destruction of almost the entire population of the earth is a good representation of what is yet to come.
Just keep talking. He's going to center you.
There is a lot of suffering on this world, but we have sinned. Every one of us here this morning has known sin. We have practiced it. We are it. And God desires to help us in these things, but his main purpose, now this is my opinion, okay? His main purpose is that we will learn the nature of sin. That's my own reasoning. But God does not want any sin in heaven. Once upon a time, there was a rebellion in heaven. And I think he is ensuring that that will never happen again. All of us have experienced the effects of sin. And I hope every one of you understands that sin is a horrible thing. And God's ways are true and right. They are pure. And His intent is to help you, to bless you, to teach you that sin is not acceptable. It is not a desirable way to live. Our bodies desire to sin. But we must put that aside. My mother, shortly after she married my dad, had a conversion experience, and she was ordained as a Pentecostal preacher. That's an odd situation, and it made an odd family. But nevertheless, God has a way of working in every situation. And God cares about every one of you in every moment of your life. And when you are suffering, I'm convinced that God is also suffering. He knows what's happening. And He cares. He cares about you. He knows every word, every event that comes to pass in your life. His wisdom is beyond our comprehension. And He will work things for the best. That is a promise. I was also born with a learning disability. When I was 14 years old, it was finally diagnosed as dyslexia. And I had a lot of problems in school, but worse yet, I made life almost unbearable for my teachers. I'm very sorry about that. But you have to be there to really understand what is going on. And I didn't understand what my problem was until I was older. And many of these children carry their problem into adulthood. Now, I'm not saying that I'm free of it, but I was fortunate. There wasn't much love in my family, but I had many people that took a concern about me and helped me. And also taught me things. I never learned to play with other children. I never learned to play ball games or do those kind of things that children do. It was very difficult for me as a child to understand what was happening in school. I knew other children could learn, and I knew I couldn't. Today, that is one of my number one interests is to help children and to help them find their place in life. However, the problem that I have or had is It's not that It's not that it interferes with your thinking. As a matter of fact, many people have described things like ADD or autism or Asperger's syndrome. There are a whole bunch of titles for these. It turns out recent research has discovered that they're all the same thing. But some people have described it as a gift. And indeed, it is a gift. And I don't have time here this morning to get into that. But in high school, I built a lot of equipment, an atom smasher, among other things. And I worked in a local radio station when I was quite young. By the time I was 10 years old, one of the doctors at a hospital allowed me to see 47 different operations. I'm sure that wouldn't be allowed today, but I'm glad I got to be in on it. And I always had adult friends and never played with children. One thing I want to mention, as a boy in a particular time where there were problems in my family, I went to live for a while, partially, at a man's home who had a machine shop. He was a clockmaker, and he was a very unusual man. As a matter of fact, I was just a child, and I never inquired as to his religion, but I believe now that he was a Mennonite. His wife wore a covering, and I never asked. I appreciated his attitudes about God and his respect for God. And one time when I was quite young, I was in his machine shop. He let me use his equipment. And laying on the workbench was always a Bible there. And I had noticed it, but I was waiting for the lathe. He was using the lathe. And I sat down there at the bench and just idly pulled that Bible over and started looking at it. And it was a German Bible. And I knew a little bit of the German language at that time. And when he got through, he said, I saw you looking in my Bible. He said, did you understand that? Can you read that? Well, it was Fraktur Schrift, but I could make it out. And I could understand a little bit of it. And I told him that. And he said, well, he said, if you ever want a real Bible, he said, you need to get a German Bible. Okay, well, that would have an effect on me years later. I guess I never thought about it a lot until years later. Okay. I made these slides up to show the process of becoming aware of God and becoming aware that we need to humble ourselves before God and give Him control of our lives. And it's like a ladder. It's up against a cross. You might wonder why. First, you have to realize, I have the words here, I'm no saint. You have to realize that you are sinful, that sin is in you. It wants to rule you. It gives you a dishonest representation of what it's going to do for you. It appears that it will be fun. It will be to your benefit. Wrong. It will destroy you. And another step then is, actually, I'm a failure. We need to realize that I am a failure. And finally, we come to realize there must be help somewhere in this world. And if we get the right message, we will understand that I need Jesus Christ. in my life. And finally, at least in my case, I had to come to the point where I was at my total wit's end. I didn't know which way to turn or how to get there. And we say, Lord, whatever it takes. These steps are very important. Why is this ladder up against the cross? Because you're going to hang the old man up there. You don't nail him up there. Christ was nailed to the cross, and those nails couldn't hold him. But it's God's ruling that you can take the old man down off the cross anytime you want to. From now to the time you die, you can take the old man down and you can go back to the ways of sin. It's always available. So I show him tied to the cross. He's not nailed to the cross. Okay, by the time I was 20 years old, I had a FCC, first class radio telephone license. I had spent a summer at the University of Tennessee. Actually, I was 13 years old that summer. I spent 1 year at Southwestern Theological College and 2 years at Tennessee Technological University. 2 years in the TVA engineering training program. Actually, that means that Tennessee Valley Authority, a power company, paid for the last 2 years of my college. And so initially I had a job at TVA. I worked for the power production division and the electrical laboratory and test branch, and I worked in the engineering development laboratory. And when I graduated, I loved that job. I learned a tremendous amount under several of the people. There were four of us plus the boss, and there was also a fifth man that wasn't there all the time, but he was a worldwide consultant on electrical power and lightning damage. And I it was a learning experience for me. I enjoyed that job. And one of the things I began to do at Tennessee Valley Authority was to study transistors. The transistor was discovered in 1957, and it was discovered by some German fellows. They came here to the United States because Bell Telephone offered to finance their research, and the transistor was developed in Bell Laboratories in New Jersey. And working for Tennessee Valley Authority, they sent me up there to Bell Labs, and I had the privilege of meeting those fellows. And I began to study transistors myself, became very interested in them. My boss at Tennessee Valley Authority was working down at Huntsville, Alabama. I was located in Chattanooga, Tennessee. He was working at Huntsville on a special power station. I didn't understand why at the time. And I remember my boss talking about these German scientists. There were 472 of them. There were 477 of them, I guess, that were brought to this country after World War II as prisoners of war. And for many years, they lived out on White Sands, New Mexico. I say they lived out there. They were prisoners behind barbed wire. They lived in little plywood army huts. In 1957, most of these men, they were given their freedom in 1957, so they were out there for 12 years and white sands and very brutal environment. And there was one man amongst those, the youngest one of them. Some of them were quite old, but the youngest one of them was by the name of Werner von Braun. And he was elected as their leader. And Werner had a strong interest in rocketry. As a matter of fact, he had even followed rocketry here in the United States. Experiments that were done by another U.S. scientist called Goddard. His last name was Goddard. And my boss came and told me one day, he said, "You're supposed to go down to Huntsville, and I want you, there's a man down there that wants to talk to you." And he gave me a piece of paper with the name Werner von Braun and an address out on the army base there. And I really wasn't interested in talking to this guy. I had an interest in the German language, but I wasn't very good at it. But my boss kept insisting, and finally I did go down to Huntsville. And Werner von Braun wanted me to move there and to help with transistors. That field is called semiconductor physics. And my boss insisted that, he said, they're going to reduce the number of people working at TVA because the president has said he's not going to use any more funds for the government. Well, that didn't exactly pan out, but my boss recommended and pushed me to go to Huntsville, and finally I did. I started working on and off there and would go down there in a TVA car. And matter of fact, for almost a year after I moved to Huntsville, I continued to get paychecks from Tennessee Valley Authority. I don't know how they worked that out. As long as the check came, I was happy. I got to do a lot of deep research on transistors. They were very crude at that time, but fortunately, Dr. von Braun realized that vacuum tubes would never survive in a space environment with all the vibration and the acceleration and so on, the extreme temperature variation and so on. And he financed my learning. He sent me all over the country. I've been in most of the semiconductor manufacturing plants. Of course, that's quite a while ago. But I was right on the front line of research and understanding in those days. And I conducted classes to teach the designers in Huntsville how to use semiconductors rather than vacuum tubes in their design. So that's how all of that went. When I went down there, there was no NASA. I don't know that it even had a name. As a matter of fact, I almost left there one time because I came to work one Monday morning and all of a sudden I had a United States Air Force colonel for a boss instead of Dr. von Braun. And me and the colonel didn't get along. He actually insisted that I salute him in the morning, and I wasn't going to do that. And he was very demanding and thought he could boss every last thing I did. And I was ready to leave. And all of a sudden, all the Air Force guys disappeared. I don't know what was going on in the politics. But that kind of thing is not very important anyway. Well, I worked at NASA for about 10 years. Most of my time was spent in Huntsville. I went to Washington, D.C. and worked for about a year at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center. They do satellites at that space center. And I was involved with a satellite that was using transistors and integrated circuits, and they were having trouble with reliability. So I worked on that, and then I went back to Huntsville again. And all of these things, I was getting further and further away from God. I was getting very involved with the world and the ways of the world, looking for high places and so on. And these transistor companies where I was going to learn all the latest things, they were very anxious to establish relationship with NASA. And so they would wine and dine you and offer you things they shouldn't offer you. And I really didn't want that. I just took it as a necessary part of what I needed to do. But all these things went on, and I'm here to tell you, I don't think many people know this, but Dr. Von Braun was very much a Christian. Exactly what his religion was, I can't say. I know he went to a Lutheran church. As a matter of fact, a large number of those German scientists in Huntsville, when they came to Huntsville, so you'll understand, Huntsville had an army base there, but it was basically closed down. There were army people keeping it up, but there was just a skeleton force there. And the town of Huntsville had a population of 8,000 the first time I went there. And I'm not quite sure what year we moved down there, but it would have been somewhere around 1962, I think. Anyway, at that time it was, I don't know, somewhere around 10 or 12,000, and a year later it was over 100,000. And you take a town and multiply its number of people by a factor of 10, you've got an interesting situation. I can remember rows and rows of houses being built, and the cotton was still growing all around them. And you'd see, at the end of that year, you'd see a combine out combining or a cotton picker picking the cotton in front of people's houses right out of their front yard. But that was the last crop that was grown there. Anyway, it was quite a thing to see a town grow that much. And Werner Von Braun, one day he asked me specifically about my beliefs in God, and I was surprised. I knew he was a beer drinker, and to me, that wasn't supposed to be. According to my mother, I was converted when I was 7 years old, and I remember the thing. It was in a Pentecostal church, and somebody took me down to the altar and told me what to pray. And I guess I don't consider that a real conversion experience, because I didn't have any personal connection with God. And it was while I was at Huntsville, I had achieved a remarkable degree of success as far as this world is concerned, and I become very much under conviction, and I didn't know which way to turn. Dr. Von Braun encouraged me to seek God. And every principle by which he operated contained God. I appreciated that. He would insist on godly action even from those who would not claim to be a Christian. And by that I mean, he would not tolerate, I'm mad at so-and-so and I'm not going to cooperate with him. He wouldn't put up with that. He actually was a very good supervisor for all of us in that he managed to force peace where he had to force it. And he told me, he called me into his office one time. I had a disagreement with one of the machinists there on the base, and he called me and the machinist in, and he said, "I hear you two can't get along." He said, "Both of you know where the gate is, where you came in here this morning, and you can go out and stay out if you can't cooperate. We aren't here to culture personal problems." He said, "We are here to work together to accomplish a goal that is almost impossible to accomplish." I found that very interesting. I also tried to comply, and so did my enemy at that time. Okay, so you know a little bit about my background. However, in Huntsville, I was so under conviction, so wondering what was right and true. There's a lot more I could tell here, but I'm very short on time. One of the things I did, I looked up every church in the telephone directory in Huntsville, and I went and talked to them. Meanwhile, the words began to ring in my ears what that machinist had told me when I was a boy. If you ever want a real Bible, get a German Bible. Now, I'm not here to push the German Bible, and if you aren't German speaking, then I can't recommend that you do that. But we have plenty of translations to choose from today. As far as I don't have any problem with the King James Bible, I know some people do, and probably one of my favorite Bibles is the NIV, but I look in all of them. I have a German Bible today, and that's what I use. I appreciate that. Well, working with those guys in Huntsville, I was given duties that caused me to work with these fellows, and I had to learn the German language. And I put on a crash course for myself to learn German when I was in Huntsville. That worked pretty well. Those guys were very picky. Those German scientists were very picky about spelling and that kind of thing. And I had to produce reports in German. Most of them came bouncing back real quick with red marks all over them. But, you know, I didn't consider that any big deal. I began to wonder what was this with the German Bible. I bought one. I managed I searched around for a while, and I found a bookstore back in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And it said Baptist Bible Bookstore on the sign outside. And I went in there and asked the lady, I said, "Have you got any German Bibles?" "No," she said, "we don't have any." "Well, thank you." And I started toward the door. "But she said, I can order one for you." And so that's where I got it. And I got my first German Bible thanks to the American Bible Society. They ordered it from Germany for me. And it was Frakturschrift, and it's a Martin Luther edition. And I had read about Martin Luther in a German magazine. I subscribed. I would go in these German homes, and I would see all these German magazines laying around and German newspapers, and I was trying to learn the language. And that's part of the reason why I bought a German Bible. I thought that'll help me learn the language. And I read these newspapers and magazines. I forced myself to read them. It was brutal. You know, to sit there and read an entire newspaper. I read everything, stock markets and everything. To try to interpret that, I had to sit there with a dictionary half the time. But it helped. It helped me learn. And meanwhile, I visited every minister in Huntsville. I had come across in one of these German magazines. I subscribed to six or seven of them and two German newspapers. And there was one of them started a year-long article on a man I never heard of at that time. His name was Martin Luther. And I thought Martin Luther was the guy over there at Atlanta, Georgia, who was causing a lot of trouble. And that's all I knew. I'm a very dumb person when it comes right down to it. I guess you can just put so much up here in this head, but okay. I don't know how I'm going to get up through all of this and deal with this man down here with a sign that says I've got 3 minutes left. But you can see the search was on, and I began to read that German Bible, and I sat there, I read that Bible through twice, and I read it and the King James side by side. And the reason I did that was I read in this magazine article that Martin Luther had tacked some studies for his students on the chapel door at college where he taught, and the Pope was given a copy of that sign he put on the chapel door, and the Pope sent a man from Rome up to Germany to do away with Martin Luther. And Martin got advance warning of this, and he fled to a castle in Württemberg, and there was a lord there that he knew. And this Lord said, you've come to the right place. I've got a room up here that has no door and no window. They had to take out a huge stone. And they put Martin in there, and he was in there for a year, with the exception of 3 days. One day he took out 3 days and went to visit his wife. If you haven't read that story, it's some interesting history. But the thing that impressed me was that Martin Luther translated the New Testament in total isolation. And the story I had been told said the Bible is a thing of man, and especially in the translation, it's all messed up. And that was bothering me. And then I came to a scripture in the 5th chapter of Matthew. I got there pretty quick. And I was very upset. Non-resistance. And it was very plain what it said. It was the words of Christ. If it was real, the church I was attending to would not support that. I went and talked to my pastor, and I copied the scripture on a piece of paper and laid it there in front of him. Oh, you can't take this for what it says. You have to take it with a grain of salt. And I couldn't do that. I'm showing you pictures here of transistors and transistor technology, and I just don't have time to explain all of this. That was part of my studies. I collected transistors that failed at NASA and cut them open and analyzed them and understood how they worked and why they failed. Anyway, transistors are very small. The work has to be done through a microscope. Me and another fellow ran a debate in Huntsville, right there on the Army base in the space facilities. We ran a debate every Tuesday and every Thursday. This is a copy of our sign that we had. We had it printed up, and we ran on Tuesdays, I was a Christian and he was an atheist. And on Thursdays, we swapped places. And, you know, that really worked on me. The more I tried to discredit the Bible, the more under conviction I got. It put a burning fire in my heart. And that played a large part in my conversion. Anyway, I'm going to jump over a bunch of stuff here. And I'm going to quit here now. But I will say that after many years of working there in Huntsville and I gained respect of many of the people in the scientific world as I went into these different companies. I went into places like Fairchild Semiconductor and Texas Instruments and General Electric and Westinghouse and different semiconductor companies. And I had the chance to learn in every one of those places. And finally, when the shuttle program came along, you understand that we were, as the designers and builders, we were way ahead of what the public knew. And although this, I left NASA before, and Dr. Von Braun did too, but his situation, he got cancer and died. And that left me without him, and there were a number of other changes. The shuttle program started. The original Saturn missile used liquid fuel, which is a very difficult thing to deal with. The shuttle has liquid fuel engines, but its main power to leave this Earth was what's called a solid fuel rocket. And Dr. Von Braun called that a Chinese firecracker. I don't mean to hit the Chinese people, but he did not like it, and I decided I was out of there. And I took a job with Sprague Electric Company. And that's where the real story begins. So I will take this up again tomorrow morning at the same time, and hopefully I can get my stuff together and get finished.
Thank you. Thank you. That was a delight.
Thank you, Stuart. We're just really glad you're here. God bless you, and you are a man of courage.
And we're going to take a break now.